What the f***?
No, it's okay. On this show, you can say fuck.
Saturday night means what the fuck. Jillian is still off doing all of her holiday things. So the McMullen is with me again.
Damn right.
And because the last couple of weeks have just been he and I kind of agreeing with each other, and that gets...
It's pleasant for me, but I can see where an audience might get bored with that.
Right, so I brought in first-timer Cecil Trachtenberg from goodbadflix.com. He gets to take off his nerd skin and talk about social issues for once.
I tell you, I am spreading my wings all over the podcastiverse.
You sure that's what you're spreading?
Oh, that or my anus.
His nerd skin is all sticky.
Let's just get right into this week's...
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
So, Charlie, you being a comedian, I'm sure you heard about the Andy Kaufman daughter conspiracy he's still alive thing, right?
Yeah, I got, the day the story broke, I got 3 different text messages from people saying, like, asking me if it's true or not, like I'm supposed to fucking know.
You've got inside knowledge, man, you're a stand-up.
What does the network say? But no, the network doesn't say anything. I did hear about the story early on, though.
Were you kind of, you know what, I really want this to be true, or were you, oh, shut the fuck up?
Well, my first thought was basically, again? Like, this is kind of like the Elvis thing at this point, you know, where it's just like, there was a, you know, an Andy Kaufman sighting, and people are saying he's alive, and I mean, I'm honestly, I kind of want it to be true, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't really care.
I would love it if it was true. Like, it would be awesome, but I know that it's not. There's no possible way.
And see, that's what I want to talk about. First, let's give some background for people who might not know what we're talking about. Andy Kaufman died in 1984. Well, about a month ago, his daughter, who was born in 1989, has come up and said that, no, Andy faked his own death. He's living under an assumed name. He's still alive today, and he's living with her mother. Now, obviously, there's a lot of speculation over, you know, whether it's true or not, but the only thing that lends a tiny bit of credibility to it, that really does sound like the long-term kind of prank Andy Kaufman would have pulled, doesn't it?
It does. That's why a part of me really would like it to be true.
But then why do you think so many people want to believe it's true rather than the Elvis or Tupac thing? Why is this one somehow gripping mainstream media more than the National Enquirer media that does the Elvis and Tupac sightings?
I think it's because it's more likely to be true in the case of Andy Kaufman, because they say the reason he faked his death is because he was just tired of being...
Andy Kaufman.
Exactly. Like, being what the world's idea of Andy Kaufman is. And, like, as a comedian, well, like, if you're a comedian and you succeed really early and something of yours becomes really well known, it's a really steep hill to climb to not be just that guy. He was just the Lotka guy or just the Mighty Mouse guy. And you have to, it's just really frustrating when you're typecast like that in, like, not in a specific project, but in the public eye. It's almost impossible to shake. So I would understand it more with Andy Kaufman than I would like Elvis or Tupac, because I wouldn't believe for one second that they would not want to be Elvis or Tupac. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of because he was such a notorious troll before trolling was even really a thing. So I think it's almost kind of expected, because people would just love that. It would be like, oh, it would be so awesome if this was true and he came out and everybody, you know, it would just blow everybody's mind, and it would be the greatest prank that anyone ever pulled.
It really
and
would.
Yeah, I mean, you know, nobody ever was able to do this and kind of get away with it. Although I kind of do wonder what would be the ramifications if this was true. Like, would he be able to, would he get into some kind of legal, you know, issues with this?
Yeah, because there is a death certificate issued for him. So I think fraud would come into it at some point. What do you think this would do to the people who knew Andy in the 70s and 80s if this were true?
What do I think it would do to those people? I think it would be like the ultimate just see.
You don't think they'd be pissed? I fucking cried for you.
And no, they'd be pissed.
You were alive the whole time?
They'd be pissed. Just people that have been talking about why they were pissed about stuff like that would have like the ultimate, see, I told you guys, this is what I was talking about.
I think that probably a lot of his basic friends or whatever would be really pissed off and whatnot. but a lot of his comedian friends would probably be initially upset, but then would realize how awesome it was and would probably laugh their balls off and would just be like, oh, you got us so good, you know, because comedians are just, I mean, are just vicious to each other a lot of times. So I think that they would probably be a little more inclined to be like, oh, you got us so good with that.
What does the daughter, and I'm using that word in quotes since, you know, we don't know if it's true or not. What does his daughter have to gain by this? Because there is kind of a self-serving angle to this, too.
There's always
she has been. Angle. Yeah, she has now been thrust into the media spotlight. If she is a total fraud, how long before this is exposed? I mean, do you see why she right now is walking a dangerous, dangerous path?
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know what there would be like to be gained, because at this point in history, it's 2014, all of his like intellectual properties, those were all, I would imagine, settled right around the time of Man on the Moon. So there's no more question about whether or not if there was a next of kin, whether or not the next of kin would be owed anything.
But she just made herself a media celebrity just by making the claim. Do you remember back in the, I can't remember if it was late 80s or early 90s, Peter Criss from Kiss was living on Skid Row? Oh, no, wait, that was an imposter claiming to be Peter Criss from Kiss? That's not Peter Criss!
Well, because that's of very little consequence. I mean, what's the harm of someone pretending to be Peter Criss? I would say they aimed low when it comes to dudes from Kiss, but I mean, there's really no harm in it. Like,
well, you don't have a whole lot of... I mean, have you seen Peter Criss? He's an ugly motherfucker, and this guy did look like him. So you didn't have a whole lot of options. He couldn't claim he was Eric Roberts or something.
I don't know. I don't really know what the like what would be to gain out of this if she is lying. I mean, because they could... I mean, TMZ and whatnot will be there, and I'm sure they're going to be like, okay, well, prove it, you know, do a DNA test or something. And then they can get that back and, okay, you are his daughter or you are not his daughter. And I mean, it'll be over.
No, we do an episode of Quarry on it.
Yes, you are not the daughter.
Now, BuzzFeed is a site whose balls I like to break every chance I get because I fucking hate them. I think they are the epitome of just feeding the masses what they want with their idiotic top 10 lists and their GIFs. And just they are the mass media encapsulated in one moronic website.
And what you said earlier was the epitome of mispronouncing shit.
What did I mispronounce?
How did he put it, Cecil? Epitome?
Epitome.
Did you say epitome?
You can play back the tape if you like. It is not epitome, nor will it ever be.
That's how I say it. You know what? You might say sabotage. I say sabotage.
Oh, shit.
You say sabotage. It sickens me.
Don't ever correct me.
Remember how Cecil said he wanted to get away from the nerd skin tonight?
Yeah, good luck, right?
Yeah, I don't think you can leave that behind as easily as you think you can. BuzzFeed has now come out and said, we will only publish positive reviews from now on. If one of our reviewers doesn't like your... Right now they said book, but I read another article that said this will also be movie reviews and TV. If you don't like it, it won't get published. We are only publishing positive reviews from this point forward, so don't even bother being negative. Is that not just the complete transparency of give us advertising revenue?
Yeah, it's the participation trophy of inconsequential journalism. This won't affect me personally because I don't read BuzzFeed. They're just dumbing down the gene pool to an astounding level. I don't even know what BuzzFeed was until the Miss America pageant, and then how could you not after that? But yeah, I think I'm against it. I think it's stupid. Any sort of media outlet that won't allow negative criticism is, in an editorial context, is just goofy.
BuzzFeed is one of those websites that it actually causes me physical pain, because when I go on my Facebook feed and I see people will be like, oh, go this and see the top 20 things that are awesome about Full House. And they'll be like, oh, I number 11 and 15 were Uncle Jesse's hair. And I'm just
like, look at that.
Oh, it's so bad.
It's Benile, I think, is the word you want.
It's ass the movie.
And by the way, Benile is how it's pronounced, shithead.
And it is ass the movie. I think Jowski said it. I'm not 100%, but it's like it's dad humor. Yeah. It's that just really bad, like, you know, gifts of nonsense, like you said, and just it's terrible. And it's one of those things where I'm amazed. Well, I guess I shouldn't be that amazed. I mean, you know, Honey Boo Boo is hugely popular and that's just crap. But yeah, I mean, people just go there in droves. And the fact that they're willing to basically say, we're not going to promote anything negative, you know, as far as book reviews, and they're just going to bring in, all right, well, here, review this book, and they know that they don't have anything to worry about. Either they'll review it positively or they won't review it at all.
Well, and see, this goes more to this kowtowing to the advertisers, because that's the reason they're doing this, because BuzzFeed is one of those hot link sites. When you're reviewing, say, the first Hunger Games book, you also have a link where you can buy it on Amazon. And if you go through their link, then they get a cut of whatever you spend. So it's in their best interests to try and sell you on this book is awesome, which of course, do with a GIF.
Geek Juice does that too, though.
Except Geek Juice doesn't play with the reviews.
No.
We put the link in, even if we say this is the worst movie of all time, we still go, and if you want to see for yourself, you can buy it at Amazon.
My question is,
about it, Charlie.
Right, we're much more honest about it. My question is, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with basically selling your reviews?
No, what's wrong with taking the honest approach, like we've tried to do? Like, we'll talk for an entire episode of Geek Juice Radio about how bad one movie sucks, which we've done, and then when it gets archived, include a link to the Amazon page to buy it. I mean, some people are going to buy it based on that. I mean, what's wrong with taking the honest approach?
I don't think that there is a problem with that. I think that there's a problem with the way that BuzzFeed is going about it. But I think that the way that, you know, we do it at Geek Juice, there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, this movie stinks, but if you want to see for yourself, here it is. You know, it's still a link to the product, and you can kind of make up your own mind. I know there's a lot of things that people have said sucked that I disagree with, and, you know, or maybe
Man
I'm like, hey, Man of Steel was a good movie.
No, it was not.
Yes, it was.
Catwoman was better. There, I said it.
Catwoman was funnier. You could go to goodbadflix.com or Geek Juice. I think it should be on Geek Juice by now, and watch my review on Catwoman. It's very funny and entertaining. It's a big hit. But anyway, I digress. I am never done being a whore.
Not while there's still whoring to be done.
BuzzFeed lives or dies by its click-through rate, which is how they get advertisers. So to them, doing it the Geek Juice way, Charlie, will not get them the click-through rate that they need. They're reviewing the Hunger Games book, and they give it a bad review. Maybe 25% of the people that would have clicked on it if you gave it a good review will still click on that link anyway. That means they're losing 75% of their revenue in that example. They're going, no, no, no. This is all about revenue. Basically, to me, what BuzzFeed has now said is all of our content is for sale. Pay us, we give you good review.
I don't know. I think BuzzFeed is just for that kind of person because, I mean, take the three of us. We're people who like to be challenged. We're people who like to read. Like, I will go out and look for negative reviews of movies I liked because I like being challenged.
Positive reviews are boring to me.
Positive reviews are very boring. Negative reviews are entertaining as shit. But I think there's just a lot of people out that just don't want to read that. Just yeah, I did. Sorry, that was the epitome of misspeaking. My bad. But there's a lot of people out there that just don't want to read negative reviews just for the sake of not having negativity. Do you know what I mean? There's people out there that don't want to be challenged. They just want to be passively informed about something that someone else enjoyed. It's difficult to describe, and I didn't even really understand it myself until my wife started watching Rachel Ray in the morning. Like, oh, whenever I'm getting ready for work, before I leave the house, there's Rachel Ray on TV. Never seen that show. Never even knew what it was. And then, like, if I come home during lunch break, she's watching, like, Ellen DeGeneres or something like that. Daytime TV is for people that don't want to be challenged. They just want to see people being positive about something, and then that's it. No real impact, and nor is one needed.
It's safe.
But is that kind of right. How, even though it wasn't daytime TV, it was late night TV, how Morton Downey Jr. got a foothold? In the late 80s when he said, yeah, fuckers, I'm something different.
That's not the same thing, though. That's not just being passive and positive. That's actively trying to cater to the lowest common denominator.
Isn't that kind of trolling, though?
I wouldn't call that trolling. I would just call that exploitation.
Yeah, I mean, with the Morton Downey Jr. angle, he kind of he saw an opportunity and he went for it. He saw how safe everything was, and he decided to take the, you know, bull by the horns approach. And
I mean, do you remember one of his old promos?
Hey, gang, getting a little bored with Oprah Phil and Johnny, huh? We'll try it. This sounds good. Wait, shut up. I'll insult everything but your intelligence.
Yeah, I remember that. And one of his old promos, I don't remember who it was specifically. There was some, he was really pissed off, obviously, about something. And the promo was he had a noose. And he's like,
take child molesters and hang them by their testicles.
Okay, that's, what was it? Yeah, what was the thing? Like, tonight we'll talk about child molesters, and if you're molest children, you should, you know, hang them by their testicles.
Yeah.
And I just remember that, and I was like, holy crap, I gotta watch this dude. Like, but that was back before, I mean, I was a lot younger, but that was also back before it became commonplace. Now, things go either one way or the other. They go the Today Show, oh my God, this is so super sanitary safe. Or they go the other end of the spectrum where it's just Ask the Movie or people getting hit in the balls, in 3D. You know, it's all one extreme to the other.
If you as the reader, and I'm not saying you too, because you're smarter than this, Charlie Barely, but you're smarter than this, but your average reader, are they not going to know that all your reviews are for sale? Doesn't that kind of invalidate the entire review then? Or the entire even ideal of a review on your site? Kind of like how when Harry Knowles made it so obvious that Ain't It Cool News would sell their reviews to whatever movie studio gave him free stuff, no matter how bad the movie was, yet people still put weird critical acclaim behind his review. Oh, Harry liked it. It must be good. Even when you know it's for sale.
I got to figure out how to get in on this shit, because I do positive stuff all the time, but it's genuine. And I don't, you know, I don't, I want movie props.
Yes,
I want free stuff.
Cecil's stuff is genuine. It comes from a place of ignorance, but it's genuine.
Well, first of all, Barely Smarter is more than enough. Like that, I'm fine with Barely. Second of all, I think there are people that know that positive reviews that are being written for a political reason, and I say political, not really political, but
financial,
an ulterior motive. I think people can tell that they're bullshit. I just don't think a lot of people care. I just think there's a whole bunch of people in the world that are reading a review just for the hell of it. I mean, just to find out about something. It really does not have an effect on them. Reviews, like positive reviews, are being shilled on websites that I don't go to anyway, so it's not really going to affect me either. I just think there's a whole lot of people in the world that don't give a shit.
But there's also a whole lot of people that think The Walking Dead is well-written and well-acted and extremely well-paced, and they have a right to be wrong, I guess.
Everyone has the right to be wrong.
Really, Cecil?
Knock it off. You and your sick and tired of your Walking Dead bashing. I think that a lot of times people will search out the review that they're looking for. So if there's a movie that they like or a movie that they dislike, they will gravitate towards looking for a site or whatever where it's something that they'll is bad mouthing it or praising it. Like, there'll be a lot of people that will go and Blair Witch Project 2 sucks. So they'll type that in Google and look for other people who agree with them. And then maybe that's kind of the case in point with BuzzFeed. They'll put in, you know, I love Breaking Bad, or I love, you know, whatever, The Hunger Games. And they'll see, oh, well, BuzzFeed does too. And they'll go and they'll read this review and then they'll put their things down there. Yes, this is so right. So I think that, I mean, a large part of that is just people gravitating towards what they want to hear.
Yeah, I'll do that. Like, sort of the opposite, though.
So like, so are you saying then, Charlie, you when you're looking for a review of a movie or something, you go in maybe not with a predetermined outcome, but a predetermined desire?
There's definitely a predetermined desire, because I like debate and discourse and things like that. So I'll look up reviews of negative reviews of movies that I liked read them. And if someone genuinely sounds misinformed, I do like to provide information. Like, I don't troll. Like, I'm not an asshole, but I do like to provide information that it seems like it was misunderstood in the review. For the most part, though, I'll look for negative reviews whether I liked the movie or not, because when people write negatively, that's when, like, the article on BuzzFeed itself, that was the most sarcastic article I've ever read from anywhere.
Oh, yeah, it was almost flippant.
Yeah, it was really flippant. Like, that's some sarcastic shit. When someone really disagrees with something, and Josh, I think you and I are probably the worst offenders at this on a trailer park. If we really don't like something, I will go on and on thinking how, like, hilariously more I can exaggerate the hatred
I go into full hyperbole sometimes on how much I hate these things.
Because that just leads to good writing, just from
it's funny perspective
to appreciate good writing. It is funny.
And like I said at the beginning, I think positive reviews, frankly, are boring. Like Charlie's trying to say, you get much more creative when you're pissed off.
Yeah, positive reviews, for the most part, are apple polishing. Like, unless it's a movie that's not generally liked by the mass media and the mass populace in general.
I will say, though, in defense of me, positive reviews of something only done well. Because, yes, you can take a product and kiss its ass and just put together a generic garbage review, or you could kind of take it and look at it analytically and be like, okay, this they did right, this they did wrong, but in the end, it's still good. And that takes a lot of work to do it right and not to just phone it in and phone in an easy positive review.
If you can't tell, our reviews are not for sale, but you can buy the products, so go to geekjuicemedia.com. We'll be back after Heart.
Hey, you folks, it's Hart Fisher here, and yeah, we're taking a break from a little what the fuck moment to make you go what the fuck even more. With me's, of course, Mr. Josh Hadley.
Yeah, I'm tired. I'm here, but I'm here.
Yeah, he's dragging ass. But what I'm about to lay down is awesome, because as Josh and I have been rubbing in on episode to episode, The Daily Show at Comedy Central takes about 1 month to 2 months to catch up to us. They're a little bit behind. And last night I was watching them, and they were talking about how corporations aren't people. Well, no fucking shit. And here's where we know they're not people, because there's a different justice system for a corporation versus a human being. Let me lay it out for you guys like this. Let's say you spend the last 10 years stealing people's homes, lying about it, and selling their loans to other corporations when you know they're bad loans. That's called fraud, guys. And in fact, it's called systemic fraud. And apparently, UBS, B of A, JP Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs were all part of this gravy train of fucking people over, regular people, people like you and me, lying to us, stealing people's homes, making families homeless. And what's a ticket for that? Does anybody go to jail for that? No. UBS paid $50 million. B of A paid $404 million. Goldman Sachs paid $550 million. Oh, and the capper was JP Morgan Chase & Company. They paid $13 billion. For all their crimes. That's right, guys, because apparently, like the Vatican in an earlier century, if you want to commit a sin, just talk to the government and you can buy that sin and be forgiven by the good Lord. Well, we got it. It's even worse than that, guys. It's fucking worse, because Jonathan Stewart brought up the simple fact that Johnson & Johnson, one of the biggest names in drugs and shampoos and baby care and Vaseline for your baby's bottom when you got to change the diaper. Well, apparently, and this really gets me, guys, apparently Johnson & Johnson was bribing doctors and pharmacies to prescribe to their patients and their customers drugs that not only did these drugs not work, not only did these drugs have no benefit to these people, they were harmful. That's right, guys. We're talking about Johnson & Johnson was bribing doctors, bribing pharmacies to give bad medicines that had bad complications that could kill people to old folks and children, as in
human guinea pig tests.
Human guinea pig tests. And Johnson & Johnson paid $2 billion with not one fucking person going to jail. But my friend, who's a tattoo artist who lives in my neighborhood, who lives about, I don't know, 10 blocks from my fucking house, has a prescription to grow weed, and he's been busted for growing 2 weed plants in his backyard so he could smoke it himself. And we as taxpayers paid for his incarceration, we're paying for his travel through the American justice system, but not Johnson & Johnson, not Goldman Sachs. And you know how Jonathan Stewart finished the segment? He finished it with a little report about people like you and me, and about 3 guys, 3 kids, 3 teenagers that were harassed by the police, told to leave a certain street corner where they were waiting for the bus to go to school. And in fact, when the bus rolled up to pick them up to take them to school, the police officers had these poor boys in cuffs. These boys were in cuffs. So if you bribe doctors to give poison medicine to babies and old people, you can buy them off. But if you're just a black kid waiting for the bus to go to school, you're going to be harassed by the police. What the fuck? God damn it. I haven't yelled in a long time on this show, but I'm fucking furious. What the fuck is this goddamn bullshit? What the fuck, America? We, the people, go to jail, but corporations can bribe and buy their way out of anything? Motherfucker, this has to end. Josh, I'll turn this over to you now.
I'm not even surprised by this anymore, Hart. This has become standard practice. I mean, my entire life, I'm 38 years old. You're a little older than me, but my entire life, the corporations have been calling the shots because of super PACs, because of lobbyists, because of this fucking Citizens United and all this shit. It's not surprising. I wish it weren't the case.
Dude, you had to go to court this week, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And you had to go to court over bullshit. You had to go in front of a judge. Bailiffs were paid money. Officers were paid to be there. Lawyers were paid to be there over what, Josh?
Because my yard was too messy.
Your yard was too messy. So we as taxpayers paid a judge and a bailiff and a fucking lawyer to harass Josh over his fucking yard, but they're going to let motherfuckers who kill babies go free. Not one person is going to go to jail from any of these corporations. There are families that are homeless on the street for Christmas this year. Mommy, Daddy, little Junior, little Billy, they're fucking homeless because of things that B of A did, because of things that JP Morgan Chase did, because of things that Goldman Sachs did, because of things that UBS did. And the government knows about it. And they're trying to tell us they're going to spy on us for our benefit. Well, these corporations are killing us. They're killing us with their drugs and their poison food. And they're fucking GMO bullshit, and they're throwing people out on the street, and yeah, they're arresting children waiting for the bus to go to school. It's brutal, and it takes Jonathan Stewart and Comedy Central a couple months to catch up, but you know what? I'm not going to complain completely, because thank fucking God they did. They did catch up. They are talking about it, and we're all talking about it. So as we head into the holidays, folks, we should be very, very thankful for whatever freedoms we have left, for whatever ability we have left to be able to even buy motherfucking food. Because it's grim out there, man. Josh, you went to court over this bullshit over your lawn.
The judge was pretty fair and pretty nice. City attorney, that's a different matter. But the judge, I don't have any complaints. He did his job.
What a waste of fucking time, man. I mean, seriously, we got real problems here. Real motherfucking problems with systemic corruption in our government, systemic corruption within our corporate structure. Dude, this Johnson & Johnson thing really sticks in my craw. The fact that they were bribing doctors to give bad drugs to old folks, it fucks me up. It really, really fucks with me. I mean, $2 billion means it's okay for you to kill babies. That's what I'm hearing here, because they gave drugs to prenatal care for little children. And these drugs that they prescribed have complications. I want to know how many children are dead because of what Johnson & Johnson did. I want to know how many old folks are no longer here. How many grandfathers aren't going to be there to give a Christmas present to their grandkid because of what Johnson & Johnson did. Because it really shows us that there's a different justice system. There's a justice system for those with a lot of money, and there's the justice system for regular folks that get thrown into privatized prison for a profit. And it doesn't even end there. I mean, Josh, you brought up this whole thing with a lawyer in Kansas City, Missouri, who had the police bang into his door and threaten to kill his dog. What the fuck was that about?
They were looking for a couple of escaped felons, and for whatever reason, they thought they might be in this guy's house. They didn't know he was a lawyer at the time. They told him, "Let us look in your house." Being a lawyer, he said, "You have to have a warrant for that." One of the cops told him, "Fine, we'll come back with a warrant, but if we do, we're probably going to end up shooting your dogs." So they were basically saying, let us look in your goddamn house illegally, or if you make us go through all the steps we legally have to, you're going to pay, motherfucker.
Not only that, but they drew a gun on him. He was at home on a Monday night. This is Eric. He's a lawyer in, Kansas City?
Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah, Kansas City, Missouri. He hears a banging on his front door. So he goes up to the front door. And he didn't know who it was when he got robbed. He was robbed a few weeks ago. So he grabs a crowbar running up to the door. He's in his fucking house. He opens the door a crack. The cops see he's got a crowbar in his hand, and they yell at him and pull their guns. So now they pulled their guns on him, as he's just a guy in his house at his front door who'd been robbed and hears a banging. So now they want to search his house. He says, "No, you're not allowed to search my house. This is my property. I decide who gets to come in here. So you need to get a warrant." So then the police start threatening him and saying, "If we have to get a warrant, we're coming back when you're not expecting it. And we're going to park in front of your house where all your neighbors can see. We're going to bust in your door with a battering ram. We're going to shoot and kill your dogs." So these cocksuckers threaten to shoot his fucking dog. But if you give him enough money, you can kill a baby. Oh, yeah. Give us some money. Hey, just go ahead and pay for it. Pay for your sin. I mean, we don't even know what these parole violators did. You're just talking about some guys looking for parole violators. So essentially, they're parole violators. They'd already been to jail for a few years, and now they're out on parole. And so they think they can bang into some guy's home at gunpoint and threaten to kill his animals. This is some crazy shit, but this is what we see. The justice system for regular people and the justice system for people with money. If you are a regular guy, you're fucked. But if you're a major corporation, you can buy your way out of any goddamn thing. Well, Josh is typing to me and telling me that we are over for our segment. So before we go, I want you guys to know we've got new American Horrors t-shirts for sale at the AmericanHorrors.com store. We have Christmas cards that are available. You could find me on Twitter at @Hart_Fisher. I'm on Facebook.com/Heart Attack Radio. And also, I wanted to make a quick correction. Last week, we talked a little bit about how the modern day Bible was put together by a Roman emperor to help him keep his empire together. Now, I referred to him as Constantinople, but Constantinople is a place. It's not a guy. Constantinus, I believe, is the gentleman who I was talking about. And they were trying to crush the extreme Arians. That's right. I said Arians. And that was the people they were trying to fight by establishing a Christian religion in Rome.
We're not too big to admit when we fuck up.
Exactly. So I want to thank the gentleman on Twitter who helped me get this right. We always want to get it right here at Heart Attack. Remember that, guys. If we don't get it right, help us out. Give us more information. We want to get it right. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
These fading flowers, precious as memory, a veiled cloud, collector's energy. We had some good machines, but they don't work no more. I loved you once, don't love you anymore. These eyes are blind, this is a pure thing. These hands I kiss, tragic as anything. These eyes are blind. this is a pure thing, a splash and hiss, beyond my measuring. These fading flowers, precious as memory, a little cloud, collector's energy. We had some good machines, but they don't work no more. I loved you once, don't love you anymore.
Do you take comfort in at least having the illusion that when you get into a car accident or you get stopped by a cop or your house is on fire, that the first responder, the fireman, the policeman has got all of his wits about him and he's at the peak of his game to help you through the situation?
No, but I would like to. I'm not against taking comfort in it. I just never have, because every interaction I've ever had with either a cop, a paramedic, or a firefighter has all 100% been negative.
I think that there are a lot of people that are cops, a lot of people that are firefighters that are very, very good, and they're good people and they do a good job. But unfortunately, there is that element, and I know some of them, and they are just assholes. And well, unfortunately.
This isn't so much about them being assholes. This is so much, the way I worded it was top of their game. Well, apparently, in multiple states, the unions allow for firemen, policemen, and first responders to be almost legally drunk while still being on the job. For instance, in Ohio, you can be at a .04 and still be allowed to work. That's just under being legally drunk. Do you feel safer knowing that the first responder that comes to help you at a car accident might be drunker than the guy that just hit you? Doesn't that worry you a little bit that the guy with the gun and the authority to use it is just this shade of being drunk off of his ass?
That worries me, sure, because I have not had much experience with police in my life, because I don't do anything illegal. I get pulled over once, maybe every 4 years.
Well, that's only because the pot's legal now.
I know, but because I'm always stoned, and I don't want to be pulled over when I'm stoned. So anytime you see me, I'm going like 10 miles an hour, obeying every traffic laws, even the ones that don't apply at the time. So I have very limited interaction with the police, but I do work in bars a lot. So every time I see the police, it's when they're called and they're responding to some kind of issue with drunks in a bar. And every time I've watched this unfold, just out of boredom, because the show's over, so I'm just killing time. The cops are always just asshole reactionaries that lead like an ideologue Supreme Court justice. Like, everything's predetermined for them as soon as they pull up. Oh, drunk's in a bar, gotta go talk some sense into him, maybe smack him around, arrest him, done. It's done before they even get there. There's no room for interpretation for them. And now, when you take that attitude, which, again, I'm not saying all cops are like this, just all the ones that I've ever seen, I'm not saying they're all like that, but the ones that are, I don't want them half in the bag and with a gun.
It's typical just nonsense of the people in charge are held to a different set of laws that we are. Basically, like when you're sitting at a stoplight and a cop comes up behind you and flips his lights on and blows through the red light and then gets to the other side and turns the lights off and then just keeps driving. It's like, well, why are you allowed to do that? You know, and the same thing with the drinking. You know, if we got pulled over by a cop and he had a few beers, but I'm getting a ticket, you know, I mean, it's ludicrous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, I don't know. I was reading the article and they made it sound like it was an old thing that kind of had been carried over. But if this was any other thing, they would have taken the time to just remove that completely. They wouldn't be like, well, it's in there because it's been grandfathered in. No, get that shit out of there.
There is one reason why it would have been in there, though. That's because cops, the same thing as resident doctors and firefighters and shit like that, when they're not working, they're still on call. And you never know when that's going to happen. If you're not working, you're at a bar with your friends, playing pool, hanging out, whatever, you have a few beers, and then some emergency happens, you get called in. That's why I'm not saying that excuses it. I'm just saying that's why it's in the contract, because according to that article, it was more of a union thing than a police department thing.
It is a union thing, because in this specific Ohio case that they looked into, that the unions actually argued for it, because a couple of cops did get punished for drinking on the job, and the union said, oh, no, they're still under what the union contract says their limit can be. You can't punish them for drinking on the job. But to me, that brings up an even larger question. Of the three most necessary professions, I think, to have your wits among you, which would be first responders, firemen, and police officers, shouldn't there be a zero tolerance policy? Because think about it. McDonald's has a zero tolerance policy. You go to work at McDonald's drunk, you're getting fired. You go to work as a stockbroker with booze on your breath, you're getting fired. The TV stations I worked at, if you even had one beer on lunch, you were getting fired. When they literally have people's lives in their hands, why is there no zero tolerance policy for this?
I think that the on-call aspect of the job, I think, is the only reason, because if that were to be enforced, your first couple years on the police force, you're on call for years at a time. Even on your days off, you could still get called in at any moment. You have to live like that. You would have to not drink ever. And if you're used to drinking, because I know the world is full of straight edge people like yourself, Josh, I think you do it just to be an asshole. But I think
just to be an asshole.
Yes, you figured out a way to do it, and you're going for the gusto. I salute you for it. It's impressive. I wish I had your level of resolve. But, like other people do it for religious reasons. But if you have someone who is not allowed to drink for an entire year, if it's not voluntary, they are fucking mean, unpleasant, bastard people. Now but, you send that to send them out with a gun, that's also asking for trouble. I think that's the reason why the policeman's union has it in every contract.
I can understand the contract having the actual wording written for that on-call reason. But what about, I'm scheduled to go in at 3 o'clock. I'm going to, at 1:30, knowing I'm supposed to go in an hour and a half, I'm going to shotgun 6 beers because I can't do anything about it.
Well, that's called being an alcoholic. If it's 1:30 p.m., that's...
What about the difference? Let's take the on-call out of it right now. Let's say this is willful drinking. You know you have a shift coming up, and you're just going to drink anyway. Or that bullshit I always hear, I just need a little bit to take the edge off.
Well, I've heard a lot of stories, and I think that in some cases that can be true for cops. But after the shift, not before the shift. Before the shift should be a zero tolerance policy. Like, taking the on-call aspect of the job out of it, in that specific instance that you illustrated, then I would agree.
Absolutely. Like, if there should be a zero tolerance policy. I personally don't drink either. I mean, but that's my own, like, decision. And I'm not saying that other people shouldn't be allowed to drink. But if you're going to be in that sort of line of work, then you need to be held to a different standard.
And when you're going to be held in a position of responsibility.
Right.
Especially a position of responsibility when you have a gun that you're legally allowed to use.
Exactly.
It just makes me wonder why the unions have so much power in these cases. Because like I said, McDonald's has a zero tolerance policy. Why does the public not care as much? Because this article came out and a lot of the comments about it were, oh, you just hate cops. That's why. You know, it was seen as like the article writer was somehow using this as a weapon to, oh, everybody hates cops. Cops are assholes. I thought the public would be more upset by this, but apparently they're totally cool with the first responder that's working on you, barely being able to tell, what the fucking CCs? Ah, fuck it. Just stick it in them.
What the blood alcohol levels even mean? Like, I've never had a DUI. I've never taken a breathalyzer. I don't know what the difference is between 0.4 and 0.8. Like, if I was better at decimal points, I would have, gotten into a better college. I would have a better job now, and I wouldn't have to fucking drink.
When you're legally drunk is the 0.08, and okay. The 0.04 is like halfway to legally drunk. Basically, you're impaired. At a 0.04, an average person, an average, 200-pound person would be swerving on the road and possibly seeing invisible bunnies. And yet, at that case, you could still be a first responder. That, to me, is more than dangerous.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. I think that there should be maybe a case by case basis thing, like something along the lines of, okay, fine, if they are going to drink, but and then they get, you know, they're on call and then they get called into a certain incident. Well, maybe it should be something like, all right, we need you to come in. There's been an accident. And maybe they say, okay, I can't because I've been drinking. Maybe it goes the next person, or I don't know. I mean, they're really, it's a weird thing that is going to infringe upon people's right to drink.
But at the same
still,
time, they choose this profession, so they should know that going in, shouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, they should. It's a very, very odd circumstance. I do think that going in, yeah, you should, you know, if you're going to be on call for 2 years or something, well, I'm sorry, you chose this decision. Maybe you shouldn't drink, or maybe you should have one beer.
Well, yeah, like let's say you had a cop who was working the graveyard shift on September 11th in 2001. He had a long night. His shift is over. He goes to get a drink. I know has a lot of all-night bars that cater exclusively to cops that work the graveyard shift. He went in there. The fucking World Trade Center happened. They're calling him in, and for something like that, they're not going to say, oh, you've had a couple beers. Okay, sit this one out. There's no way they're going to say that. I don't think this is a black and white issue. I think...
I see what you did there.
I didn't even see what I did there. Nice. But it's not a black and white issue. I think there are too many extenuating circumstances that could have an effect in any case. It's definitely just a case-by-case thing.
Because, see, I was really just disturbed when I realized just how drunk they legally can be allowed to be. Because, like I said, your average Target, Walmart, they have zero tolerance. You're not allowed to stock shelves drunk, but you're allowed to drive a car. You're allowed to drive a fire engine while you're impaired. And, you know, it even brings up now with, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, it even brings up the whole thing of the driving while stoned.
Yeah.
You know, are cops going to be able to toke up before the shift now?
What an amazing fucking world that would be.
I do want to go into one other final topic here. It's kind of a follow-up more than anything else, though. Now, Charlie, you remember long time ago, you and I talked about when that proposition was going through L.A. about requiring condoms and safety equipment for all the porno actors?
That was a while back. That was maybe my second or third time doing this show.
Yeah. Well, not only did that go through, when we roll to the new year, it's now enforceable to the point where literally if blood, vaginal secretions, semen, urine, feces, basically anything in the porno industry is required.
You're such a romantic.
It happens. Hey, I'm a realist. If any of that happens, then all of a sudden they have to wear safety goggles and protective gear. Do you think this is a smidge overkill for a relatively voluntary industry?
I think there is one guy out there with just an insane sexual fetish to safety goggles who just won the goddamn lottery.
I think it's ludicrous. I think it's, of all the things that are going on in the world right now, this was what their focus was on. You know, once again, it's the puritanical nature of our culture where they, instead of focusing on finding more jobs or fixing the economy or any other thing in the world that needs work, no, porn industry needs to start, you know, wearing goggles and protecting them from money shots. And it's just,
but how do you think that's, but don't you think that's going to radically affect how porno is shot? Because I mean, seriously, isn't kind of the point is coming on her face, not her safety goggles, like you're doing woodwork?
I always thought chicks and glasses were pretty hot.
Glasses and goggles are not the same thing, Charlie.
I'm willing to take what I can get.
Yeah, I think it's going to dramatically change the way that if this, I mean, I know it's in effect, but I mean, if this actually happens, it's going to change things. Like how they're going to have to go to another country or something to film.
No, what they'll do is they'll just go to Vegas. And this is how short-sighted it is. The porn industry gives almost $1 billion a year to Los Angeles County in tax revenue. All that tax revenue will be going to another state. Way to go, California. You already are on the verge of declaring bankruptcy. So let's run out the one business that consistently pays taxes, right?
And if if they wind up in Las Vegas, they will have gone to the one place that didn't need any more free money.
Right, but it's the one place where there's not going to be any extra judgment.
Where it's actually going to be more legal if they're hookers.
On that note, before Charlie's dog emulates, where can we find Charlie McMullen?
I was informed by my daughter this week that I am all over YouTube, so go ahead and look there. Twitface and geekjuicemedia.com.
What about Cecil T?
You can find me on goodbadflix.com as well as geekjuiceradio.com.
And Geekjuice Media.
Geekjuice Media. Geekjuicemedia.com.
So close.
I know.
So Bush League, man. So Bush League.
And I am also on the YouTubes, but you should go to my site or go to geekjuicemedia.com before you go to the YouTubes.
Same geekjuicemedia.com as well as 1201beyond.com. Buy a t-shirt there. We have t-shirts now. And 1201beyond@gmail.com to contact us. Oh, I hear Charlie's dog going up.
Just here, I'm not wasting a moment. Oh, just here, I'm not wasting a moment. Well, something's telling me where I should go. Well, there's an apple upon my shoulder, and a worm trying to wiggle out. A trespasser faces me not. Well, I'm a seeker of truth. A non-existing reality sees me live my life passionately. Well, there's a dark side to everyone. Even when the moon is new, a waiting moment seems to pass. The only thing left is what to think of you. Well, it's crystallizing fast. A truth alive and brand new math. Electric vision, the lights are blue. Chris sensations, no limitations. Well, there's a dark side to everyone. Even when the moon is blue, a waiting moment seems to pass. The only thing left is what they think of you.
What the fuck is a 1201 Beyond production? Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.